You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. I'm also the co-editor of Dunking with Wolves, the Timberwolves site on the Fansided Network. Today's episode of Locked On Wolves is brought to you by McDonald's, proudly serving communities since 1965. McDonald's has always been more than just a place to get tasty, affordable food. It's an unofficial community center. A big thank you to our friends at McDonald's for always being there. I'm loving it. Happy Saturday slash Sunday. Happy weekend, everybody. And happy Minnesota Timberwolves victory weekend. The Wolves defeated the New Orleans Pelicans on Saturday night. They're now 2-0. It was an ugly game, but today's show is going to be all about that game. We're going to do key takeaways from the game as well as the overall game flow, how the Wolves hung on at the end, despite Karl Anthony Towns fouling out not even at the midway point of the fourth quarter, and then also individual studs and duds from this game. So that's the show here today. First of all, thank you for making Locked On Wolves your first listen each and every day, including on the weekend when the Wolves play. Remember, Locked On Wolves is free and available on all platforms. That includes YouTube as well as Apple, Google, Spotify, the all new Odyssey app, and really anywhere you listen to podcasts. You can follow on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves and also at BBeacon with two B's, two E's, C-K-E-N. All right. Let's go ahead and get into the game flow here quickly. The Pelicans, of course, were playing on the second night of a back-to-back, and were already 0-2 on the year. They got beat by 20 by the Sixers on Wednesday, and then they were beat by, I think it was 12 or 14 by the Chicago Bulls on Friday night. And so second night of a road back-to-back, no Zion Williamson, of course, also no Josh Hart, who also missed Friday's game. I think it was a quadriceps issue. So down two starters, including, of course, their best player by far in Zion Williamson. This was a game the Wolves should have won. 2 days rest at home, full strength, no excuse for the Wolves to lose this game. And it looked like they were going to win it fairly easily based on the beginning of the contest. The Wolves dominated early in the game. They started the game up 10-0. And then the Pelicans, 8-0. The Pelicans scored 10 straight themselves. So it was an 8-0 Wolves run, a 10-0 Pelicans run, and then a mini Wolves run that got them back on top. Karl Anthony Towns was phenomenal in the first quarter. He scored 13 points in the first, a couple of three-pointers, a couple of post touches, offensive rebounds, was doing a little bit of everything. And the Wolves had, after they gave up the lead, and the Pelicans, I think, led by as many as four in the first quarter. By the way, the Pelicans had led in their first two games of the season for a total of like 48 seconds over the course of the season, according to the Bally Sports North broadcast with Dave Benz and Jim Peterson. Dave mentioned that early in the game. And the Wolves then built another double-digit lead early in the first, but gave it all back late in the first quarter and ended up only with a 1-point lead headed to the second. They played much better in the second quarter. The bench started the quarter, really just a bench unit out on the floor. Eventually, Naz Reid was on the floor with only bench players, which I thought was interesting. And we'll talk more about the rotation later in the key takeaways. But it was starters plus Naz, which was something we saw similar. I guess it wasn't exactly the starters, but we saw Naz play a lot down the stretch after Towns eventually fouled out. But Naz played well with the starters. They went on a little like a 5-0, 6-0 run with Naz on the court with starters. Towns came back, had a strong close to the first half for the most part, and ended up being up by 10 at halftime. So Wolves up by 10 at the half. And then in the third quarter, the Pelicans started to kind of chip away. The Wolves offense was really stagnant. They were stuck on like single digits. They had like 9 points with only a couple of minutes left in the third quarter. In fact, and we'll talk more about this in key takeaways, but the Wolves at the 2 minute mark, 2.5 minute mark of the third quarter. So almost the end of the third quarter, the Wolves had only 3 free throw attempts on the entire night. At that point, they were 1 of 3 from the line. Naz had a couple of free throws right around that point in time, but and for the game, by the way, the Wolves were just 6 of 10 at the line, which is not a recipe for success at all for anybody to only shoot 10 free throws over the course of the game. The Wolves, it's not like they weren't being aggressive. There was no rhythm to the offense. And again, that's something else I want to dig into a little bit more. But they weren't getting the calls and they weren't really persevering despite that. They weren't really fighting through the contact, truly getting to the rim. And they weren't shooting the ball well enough from the outside to manage a win either. So it just was pretty ugly. They're also out-rebounded in the third quarter by a margin of 20-9. Timberwolves pulled down 9 rebounds total in the third quarter. And then at the end of the third quarter, the Wolves got a steal, had a 3-on-1 fast break, ended up getting a shot blocked. The ball was going out of bounds. And I think it was Jared Vanderbilt saved it and got it right into Naz Reid, who just kind of caught it in traffic and flipped it in right at the buzzer. And that play, I typed this in my notes at that moment, was basically a microcosm of the game where the Wolves did the right thing on defense. They got on a fast break. It was a terrible fast break. They made the hustle play to save the ball from going out of bounds. It happened to go right to Naz Reid. Vando tried to pass it to Naz, but he got it to Naz and he flipped it in right at the buzzer. So ultimately the right thing happened. It started the right way, right? The process was all messed up in the middle, and then it finished in a positive way for the Timberwolves. That was a microcosm of the game, and that was before we even got to the fourth quarter. The Wolves opened the fourth with Jordan McLaughlin, Malik Beasley, Anthony Edwards, Taurean Prince, and Karl-Anthony Towns on the floor. And Malik Beasley was great in transition. He was really quiet in the first half and only played 19 minutes, and that appears to be par for the course. We're two games in, but that seems like the early season plan is Beasley's not going to get a ton of run, not what he did last year, but he played really well in the fourth quarter in this game and helped them early in the fourth kind of maintain their lead. And I'll talk a little bit more about depth later, but Taurean Prince guarded Brandon Ingram for a good chunk of time in the fourth quarter and did a really good job. It, just a luxury to be able to have Prince come off the bench and be able to do a solid job on an all-star like Brandon Ingram. Towns fouled out of this game with 6:43 remaining, I believe is what it was. Let me pull up my note here. I think it was 6:43. 6:43 mark. The Wolves are up 9 at the time. And Towns fouls out on it. First, there's a double foul on a rebound on the other end of the floor. I hate the double foul call. I get it, though. Towns was kind of pulling down Valanciunas. Valanciunas was not bothered by falling on top of Towns. He had a hand in that as well. Then on the other end, Towns spins baseline and elbows Valanciunas in the head. He did do that. I understand why it's an offensive foul. That type of and actually after the game, Chris Finch talked about this in the postgame that Towns gets called for more offensive fouls than it seems like any other star player. Yes, that was a foul, but how many times are we seeing guys do that? How many times did Shaq do that throughout his career and not get called for a foul? How many times do we see Joel Embiid do that and not get called for a foul? But anyway, it's called on Towns. He then gets a technical for leaving the court on his way to the bench, kind of going down the tunnel and around to the bench. And he's out of the game. He gets called for a tech. And there's 6:43 left. I mean, he got the fifth and sixth fouls in such rapid succession, and the Wolves were still kind of clinging to that 9-point lead, trying to build it back up. So Finch hadn't pulled him from the game yet, and he's gone for the rest of the game. As it turns out, they ultimately win by 7, and it should have been 9, except for a silly foul at the end of the game. But it was a little dicey late. D'Angelo Russell had to hit a big three. There was 2:39 left. The Wolves were up only 3. D'Lo makes a 3-pointer to push it to 6. Then it's back down to 4 with about 30 seconds left. D'Angelo Russell banks in a difficult 3 in an ISO situation with 25.9 left on the clock to basically win the game, put the Wolves up 7 with 25 seconds left. It was a crazy shot. D'Lo had a terrible game. We'll talk more about that later. But hit 2 big threes and a couple of other big shots in the fourth quarter. Did all of his damage late. And Anthony Edwards had a really quiet fourth quarter. He didn't do much at all down the stretch. And that was the time I tweeted this when Towns went out. This was the time when we need to see if Anthony Edwards can take over with no Karl-Anthony Towns on the floor to take some of the heat off of him. And Edwards had a couple of kind of so-so possessions. He made a couple nice passes where the Wolves missed open threes that would have given him assists. And overall, Ant played well. But this was the D'Angelo Russell show down the stretch. Nobody else really did much, and the Wolves offense continued to just look really sluggish late in the game. But the Wolves held on. They ended up winning by 7. And it was a slogfest, in that this was, I mean, what was the final? 96-89. So not exactly, they're not going to send the tape of this one to the Naismith Hall of Fame, are they? But fun first quarter, fun finish to the game with D'Lo hitting the big shots, and awesome that the Wolves were able to hold on, basically hold serve entirely with no Karl-Anthony Towns in the game in the final 6-plus minutes of the game. All right, I want to hit key takeaways next. A couple things I haven't talked about yet, so we're going to do all that here coming up. First, though, let's talk about our title sponsors of the show today, and that, of course, is McDonald's. This episode of Lockdown Wolves is brought to you by McDonald's, proudly serving communities since 1965. McDonald's has always been more than just a place to get tasty, affordable food. It's a place where friends and family can come to reconnect, a place where classmates can meet up for a study group, knowing they'll have dependable Wi-Fi and endless supplies of French fries and McFlurries. Win or lose, it's a place where teammates, competitors, the home team, or the away team can come to recharge, and it's the place you always look forward to stopping at a long road trip to rest your legs and refuel. McDonald's is a staple of every road trip for my family. Also, just last night, I had some McDonald's. My wife was coming home from an event and it was like, hey, we're still hungry. Let's grab some McDoubles and some fries. Fantastic. Late night, early morning, McDonald's breakfast is the best. What are you waiting for? Head to your local McDonald's to refuel and reconnect. Did somebody say Lockdown Wolves McDonald's watch party? Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. I'm loving it. McDonald's. All right. Let's go ahead and talk about key takeaways from this one. Okay. So the Timberwolves, I mean, generally speaking, this was, like I said a minute ago, a slugfest, right? The entire game, save for the first quarter, which is a little bit more up and down, a little bit more fun. But the offense for the Wolves, there's no other way to say it. It was really ugly. Again, save for most of the first quarter. It was bad in the half court. They never really got into a rhythm. And I said this after the game on Wednesday, the win over the Rockets. It was kind of the same thing. The half court offense was really slow early in the Rockets game until they started to get to the free throw line. Then there was a bit more of a rhythm established. Everything opened up and they started making threes late in the game. This game was flipped. They started the game by making a bunch of threes. They never really established the ability they did kind of dominate in the paint early, but that was more just Towns, you know, on the glass. They rebounded the ball so well, but they weren't getting to the free throw line. Then when the threes stopped falling, the offense was just completely disjointed later in the game. But the problems weren't simply in the half court. It also extended to the fast break. The spacing in the open floor was horrible for the Wolves in this game. I could go back and rewatch this, and I bet there's 6 to 8 times minimum that the Wolves had bad floor spacing in a transition situation in like a 3-on-2 or a 4-on-3 or whatever it might be. And even like a 4-on-1, there's one example. I think it was the play in the fourth quarter where Beasley got fouled in the open floor. It was a McLaughlin steal. It was Beasley, Edwards, and I forget who else was running on the other wing. And McLaughlin kicked it back to Beasley. He was the closest player, but the spacing was poor. The defender was closer to Beasley. And if he'd gone a little further back to Edwards, it would have been a dunk, maybe an and one. Instead, Beasley gets fouled. He misses both free throws, and the Wolves get nothing off of a great defensive play from McLaughlin and a 4-on-1 fast break. They get 0 points. And credit the Pelicans for playing that correctly. I don't remember who the defender was for New Orleans. But that was an example of poor spacing, the wrong decision by McLaughlin, Beasley not able to make the shot when he was fouled or make the free throws. And that's just one example that's front of mind, but there were at least 5, 6, 7 others just like that, where the spacing was bad, the decision-making was generally poor, and the execution overall in the open floor situation was just miserable. Now, all that to say, the offense will be just fine. Don't worry about the Timberwolves offense. Don't worry about scoring 96 against a depleted and already kind of a poor Pelicans team, which, by the way, with no Zion Williamson and compound that by no Josh Hart, and I ripped on them enough in yesterday's show, in Friday's show, for their offseason, because their roster is not great. This is going to be a struggle for them if Zion remains out for much longer, and then compounding that with other missing starters is not good. But the Wolves offense will be okay. They've got too much talent on offense to not be okay. I mean, it was fine on Wednesday, right? I mean, they started a little slow, but it was fine. I mean, and granted, there were only three guys in double figures, but D'Angelo Russell, Karl-Anthony Towns, and Anthony Edwards are going to get theirs. And eventually, Malik Beasley, some of these other guys are going to come to the party. You know, Prince was very good from downtown in the Wednesday game. It's just the Wolves offense never got into enough of a flow to get their true three-point shooters open three-point attempts. I guess Beverly struggled a little from outside the arc in this one. But all that to say, the offense was miserable. Like, both things can be true, right? The Wolves offense was really bad, both in the open floor and in the half court, but it will be fine long term. I think both can be true. It's a rhythm thing. The free throw attempts, again, 3 free throw attempts for the Wolves near the end of the third quarter. And then for the game total, they only had 10 free throw attempts. And a couple of those late in the game when the Pelicans intentionally fouled. So effectively they had 8 up until the Pels tried to follow the Wolves late in the game to extend the game. Just a miserable performance in terms of half court offense and fast break offense from the Wolves. Point number two, or takeaway number two, the rotation remains really intriguing. And I'm going to make 2 points here, actually. So these are 2 separate takeaways. One, the rotation is intriguing, and 2, the depth of this team really came through. So I'll get to the depth in a second. They're related, but they're 2 separate points. Trust me. So rotation being intriguing. I made a note sometime in the third quarter that basically Jordan McLaughlin is now out of the rotation, right? Beverly was suspended for the Wednesday game because of the playoff stuff from last year. So he didn't play. McLaughlin assumed the backup point guard minutes on Wednesday. with Beverly back on Saturday, McLaughlin didn't play at all in the first three quarters. So I made the note sometime middle of the game that, hey, McLaughlin's the odd man out. It's kind of what I would have expected. But D'Lo is having a bad game. And I don't know if this is because of D'Lo having a bad game or if this is something back when McLaughlin resigned, I talked about on this show about the possibility that McLaughlin's still in the rotation and the Wolves just kind of use him to spell Russell and Beverly and then bring one or both of them back in crunch time. Well, McLaughlin, so I don't know if this was because D'Lo was struggling or because this was the plan all along, but McLaughlin started the fourth quarter on the floor by himself. Well, not by himself, but as the only point guard. No Beverly, no Russell on the floor. And finished the game with D'Lo. And Patrick Beverly did not play a single minute in the fourth quarter. He played 22 minutes over the first three quarters. So 22 of the first 36 minutes of this game did not see the floor in the fourth quarter. Jordan McLaughlin was the flip side. He didn't see the floor at all in the first three quarters. Played all 12 minutes, every single second of the fourth quarter in this game. And it was fantastic, McLaughlin was. So that to me was really notable. Also, Josh Okogie didn't play a minute in the fourth. And the Wolves had the luxury of Taurean Prince. We'll talk about him in a minute. Being able to be on the court. And when Jaden McDaniels was getting a breather at the beginning of the fourth quarter. But Okogie was the only Wolves player who didn't score, by the way. He was fine in the first half. He actually was really good defensively. He moved the ball well on offense. He had a couple of really nice passes. He had a couple of steals in the first half. Only played 18 minutes, which actually ended up being the second least on the team next to McLaughlin, who, again, only played the fourth quarter. So the rotation is really intriguing, and I'm fascinated to see how this plays out. Now, if Chris Finch is to be believed, and I don't see why he wouldn't be based on his comments in the media, this rotation may not like be super settled. There's basically going to be 11 guys that are going to see minutes, which is what we saw in this game. There were 11 guys who played, and all of them played 12 or more minutes. And it may not be the same thing every night, right? I mean, of the four guys who didn't play, Nathan Knight, who were active, right? So Knight was active, McKinley Wright wasn't, of the two-way guys. Nathan Knight, Jake Layman, Jalen Noel, Leandro Balmaro. None of those guys are going to be regular rotation guys early in the season if everybody's healthy, right? There's no expectation that they will be. So are all 11 of these players going to see time? Now, this was obviously impacted a little by the Towns foul trouble, but really, I guess that only gave Nas the minutes increase in the fourth. But I think this is going to be really fun to watch and see how this rotation continues to evolve over the next few games. My third takeaway is the depth of this team. Once again, there's 11 guys that played, and Beverly said this postgame in his interview on Valley Sports North with Marnie Gilner that there's 10, 11 guys, you know, a good chunk of whom, 10, 11 rotation-worthy guys, a good chunk of whom are starter-worthy guys. That's where the Wolves are at. I talked about preseason. I didn't think Okogie would be a starter on this team, and he is a starter simply because of the skill set that he possesses that augments the other, you know, the offensive-minded players with Beasley coming off the bench. I get that. But I mean, you could make an argument for starting every single guy that played, except for maybe McLaughlin and Reed, simply because the Wolves' depth at their positions at point guard and at center. But I mean, there's like eight or nine guys that you can make an argument for as starters on a good team. And the depth of this team, and what stuck out to me the most was Taurean Prince in the fourth quarter coming in, hadn't played a whole lot in middle stages of the game. He came in early in the first quarter, it seems like he will, kind of as a sixth, seventh guy. And then came in at the start of the fourth and really locked down Brandon Ingram and bridged the gap to when Jaden McDaniels came back late in the game. And McDaniels was able to do a solid job on Ingram late. And yeah, Ingram got 30 and he shot the ball over 50% from the field, but he had seven turnovers and they forced him to pass the ball and be an assist guy in the fourth quarter, probably more than the Pelicans needed him or wanted him to be. So I thought Prince being able to give the Wolves an option, a secondary option on Brandon Ingram was really important, and he did an outstanding job. But that just goes to underscore the depth that this team really does possess. Okay, let's finish with individual studs and duds, which, by the way, was a little bit more challenging than I was expecting in this one. But we'll do that here next. First, though, let's talk about our friends over at Built Bar. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar of all time. You have my word on that. It tastes exactly like a candy bar. If you're not a Built Bar person, if you're not a protein bar person, you should be, and you should be a Built Bar person because, again, I didn't like protein bars ever. I never really ate them. The ones I tried didn't taste good. But then I tried Built Bar, and it's phenomenal. I have one every single day, sometimes two. And again, they taste exactly like a candy bar. They're always releasing new flavors on the website, limited edition flavors, just an amazing mix of new flavors all the time. There's some new fall flavors out now. There's nine staple flavors, though. You can get a mixed box right now. You get two of each of the nine flavors. And that's probably the way to go if you've never tried them before. But look out for the mint brownie, the cookies and cream, anything with coconut. They're all delicious. And check out the macros in Built Bar. 17 to 18 grams of protein, calories ranging from only 130 per bar, which is crazy, to 180. Because again, these taste like candy bars. You'll get 4 or 5 grams of sugar and just 4 to 5 grams net carbs in each bar. Built Bar is also the official protein bar of the U.S. track and field team. Go to built.com and use the promo code LOCKED15. You'll get 15% off your order. Again, that's promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at builtbar.com. Okay, let's get into individual studs and duds from this one. This was actually a little bit of a challenge. If you'd asked me at halftime or even sometime in the third quarter, the first two studs would have been super easy, and I'm still going to stick with them. Karl-Anthony Towns and Anthony Edwards were both fantastic in the first half of this game. Cat had 13 in the first quarter alone and was really good. He held Jonas Valanciunas down for most of the game, battled him really well, had a couple of just killer box outs. There was one in the third quarter. I made a note about it. He faced up Valanciunas on the boards and boxed him out, allowed Okogie to get a tough rebound, and the Wolves scored on a fast break going the other way. Really great game overall from Towns. And again, the first half was fantastic. He got sucked in a little bit with the foul game, as he tends to do, and I noted in the preseason on this show and also after the first game of the season that Towns did a good job avoiding that. He ran into it again in this one. He had, I think, 2, maybe 3 offensive fouls. Of course, he fouled out at the 6:43 mark of the fourth quarter. So he had 5 turnovers, but 2 or 3 of those were because of offensive fouls directly. One was a miscommunication. So it would have been really easy to trim those 5 turnovers back to 1 or 2. But the other numbers are all fantastic. 25 points, 10 of 20 shooting, 3 of 6 outside the arc. He did only attempt the 2 free throws, made both of them. He also only had 4 rebounds in just 29 minutes, but he had 3 blocks and 2 assists in this one as well. Just a good all-around game from Towns. The foul thing is not great, but he was the reason the Wolves built the lead that they had in the first place. And he's just got to continue to work on body control. Jim Peterson talks about this all the time on the Wolves broadcast. Knowing what his off arm is doing at all times is super important. Knowing what his shoulders are doing when he steps through. It is true that I think he's officiated differently for whatever reason. I don't know if there's some sort of narrative that's out there that, that officials are subscribing to, but you know, a good chunk of the time they are fouls. It's just frustrating that it's not consistently called on other players in the league. But anyways, Cat's a stud for this one. I'm still going to give one to Anthony Edwards, despite the fact he all but disappeared in the fourth quarter. I think he had 16 at halftime, if I'm not mistaken. He ended this game with only 19 points and 8 of 22 shooting, but he was 3 of 8 outside the arc, which is good. He had 9 rebounds, 5 assists, a steal and a block, and only 1 turnover. He was a team best plus 10 in the plus minus column, which I will mention plus minus if I think it's relevant. But if you're a regular listener to the show, you know that I like to note that it's very noisy and there's a lot that goes into it. Obviously, it's not the end all be all. I'm by no means suggesting he was the best player on the floor in this game, although plus minus would suggest that he had the best plus minus mark in the game of any individual player. He also by far played the most minutes on the Wolves. He played 37 minutes. Nobody else played more than 29 for the Wolves. But 19 points, 9 rebounds, 5 assists, a steal and a block for Ant, only 1 turnover in 37 minutes. And I thought he was really, really good for about 2.5 quarters. Would have been great to see him step up a bit more in the fourth, but we can't discount what he did in the first part of the game, just like Towns, allowing the Wolves to build that lead. Now, my third stud, this is where it gets a little bit tricky. I'm going to cheat a little bit, and I'm going to combine Jordan McLaughlin and Torian Prince and give them each half of the third stud for this one, because Jordan McLaughlin didn't play the whole game, played every single second of the fourth quarter, and was great. 6 points, 2 rebounds, 2 steals, an assist, 2 of 3 shooting, and got to the free throw line and made both of his free throws there. Really, really good for Jordan McLaughlin. The defense, the energy, the hustle plays, he had 2 steals, but there were 2 or 3 other loose balls he got his hands on, contesting rebounds, and was just all over the floor. Now, he had a ton of, he hadn't played all game, right? So he had fresh legs coming to the fourth quarter. That helps. But that's also just the way that J-Mac always plays, is he plays with I wouldn't even call it reckless abandon. It's an under control hustle, which, like, say, Jared Vanderbilt is not always under control, but he plays hard. Jordan McLaughlin's pretty much always under control, and he pretty much always plays hard. He's just a solid player, and he had a great fourth quarter, very good defensively, aggressive. Ball pressure was fantastic for him, and it's always been good, but it feels like it's up a half notch after being around Patrick Beverley. The other half stud goes to Torian Prince, because I thought he did a great job on Brandon Ingram in the fourth quarter. Kind of an unsung hero in this one. Only 16 minutes played, only 3 points, 1 of 3 shooting. He made a three early in the game, had 1 rebound, 1 assist, 1 steal in 16 minutes. But the defense was really, really good down the stretch. And so I'm going to split it between Prince and McLaughlin, but this is also the part in the show where I'm going to call out some other stuff I liked. And that was Malik Beasley's fourth quarter. I mentioned this in the game flow, but he did 6 points, 3 of 5 shooting from the floor, missed those free throws late. But, you know, besides that, was really, really good overall for the game. And this box score, I'm looking at the ESPN box score and they had some mistakes in here. This was the same early in the game. They had Towns with 5 personals when he'd fouled out. And for some reason it's got Prince as 0-2 at the free throw line, but I'm almost positive that was Malik Beasley that missed those 2 free throws in transition late in the game. I'm almost 100% sure those were Beasley's missed free throws. But at any rate, still a solid fourth quarter from Beasley despite the missed free throws. And then Jared Vanderbilt only played 13 minutes, but he had 8 rebounds and 3 steals in 13 minutes, which is nuts. Look at Basketball Reference on Sunday and take a look at his block and steal rates, or steal and rebound rates, I should say. They're going to be off the charts. Another good game from Vando, and I would expect him to see more minutes moving forward. This was just a really interesting game with the way things kind of shook out and also the lineup that the Pelicans play. Okay, duds. It was actually really hard to come up with a dud for this game too, because up until the end of the game, D'Angelo Russell was hands down the worst player on the floor for the Wolves. And I'm going to cheat a little on this one too. It's only the second game of the season. I'm already fudging the rules on my studs and duds game here, but we're going to say non-fourth quarter D'Angelo Russell is the dud for this game. He was terrible before the fourth quarter. He was like 1 of 9 shooting. He had 6 turnovers before the fourth quarter. No assists going into the fourth. 1 assist. He finished the game with 12 points, 3 rebounds, 1 assist, 7 turnovers, 2 of 7 outside the arc, 5 of 14 shooting, and 0 free throw attempts. But he hit the 2 biggest shots of the game for the Wolves. 2 3-pointers in the fourth quarter was really obviously vital to the Wolves winning this game, to the Wolves keeping that lead with Edwards going quiet and Towns on the bench with 6 fouls. And then also, I guess if we're not going into it, the Wolves 3-point shooting, I have to call that out as being awful in this game. 12 of 38, 31.6%, which I guess isn't awful, awful, but it's not good. Biggest culprits, Patrick Beverley, 1 of 5, Russell, 2 of 7, McDaniels, 0 of 2, and Naz Reid, 2 of 6, I guess isn't awful, but Naz was 2 of 6 outside the arc with a bunch of those deep top of the key 3-point attempts that Naz likes to take. So 3-point shooting, getting to the free throw line, fast break offense, half court offense. Offensively, this was bad for the Wolves. Somehow, shooting a sub 32% from 3 and only attempting 10 free throws, and Towns fouling out with 6-plus minutes left in the game, they scored 96 points, which if you told me all that stuff, I'd be like, oh, they probably struggled to score 80 and lost this game. They won in part because the opponent was depleted and not very good, and also because they hit a couple of big shots down the stretch, and also they had done so well early in the game, mostly Towns and Edwards in terms of their offense. But at any rate, the cliff notes on this one: ugly, sloppy, terrible offense, active defense, enough good defense and rebounding early in the game. By the way, they were minus 15 on the glass too for the game, the Wolves were, but they were really good early and they built that 10-point lead at halftime. They ended up winning by 7. So I guess we could call it gritty, as much as I think that gets thrown around a bit too much. This was a gritty victory. And I said this on Twitter, but if this is the worst the Wolves play offensively all year, and it has to be about as bad as they're ever going to play offensively, great. That's great news. They still won the game against admittedly a bad opponent, but you still have to beat. I mean, this Pelicans team could very easily come in and win on Monday for their first win of the season. You still have to play the teams that are in front of you, whether they're healthy or injured. And the Wolves gutted out a win when their offense was awful. And that's really good. Early in the season, most teams' offenses are not clicking. The Wolves are in that boat, even though they scored a bunch of points on Wednesday. But riding the defense and the hustle and the rebounding and all that stuff to a win early in the season is great. And hopefully the offense clicks a lot better on Monday. I'm sure the Wolves will have plenty to talk about in the film room on Sunday, preparing for Monday's game, because the offense, again, was not on par with where it needs to be. Okay, that's all we have for you today here on the show. We'll, of course, be back on Monday with the regular Monday podcast. If you're new to the show, this is a Monday through Friday daily podcast with post-game podcasts after weekend games as well. Post-game pods every night of the week. We'll post immediately following the game. So we'll have a Monday morning show, and then Monday night following the game, we'll do a post-game pod that posts late Monday into early Tuesday, and that'll count as Tuesday's show. So be sure that you're following or subscribed to the show if you're not already. And you can do that again anywhere you listen to podcasts. Thank you for making Locked On Wolves your first listen each and every day. Free and available on all platforms. That includes YouTube. If you don't want to have to look at my face while you listen to the show, you can also just listen to the audio anywhere you get podcasts, Apple, Google, Spotify, and of course the all new Odyssey app. You can also follow on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves and my account at BBeacon with two B's, two E's, C-K-E-N. A reminder that Locked On Wolves is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on all the biggest stories. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.